power. Okay, so this Quarkus exists. How do we interact with that Quarkus? What can this Quarkus actually do to change the world?
The last thematic one on inclusive social development, you're saying leaving no one behind.
And I think that goes for a lot of people working in Y20. It's kind of lifelong participation in trying to advocate for youth issues to be focused on, for youth voices to be heard, and for that energy and creativity which comes from young people to be so present.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Mobilize podcast. I'm David Lytle, and today we are joined by Moketsi Koela. We're going to be chatting about the Y20. We're going to be chatting about youth issues. We're going to be chatting about youth activism and just pretty much everything related to the youth. So with that said, let's jump straight in.
Okay, cool. Let's get started by actually explaining what is the G20 and what is the Y20? Like, what do they do? What are they? Like I said, this is our first podcast in the series. So we haven't had really, within the podcast series, an explanation of what the G20 is. Mm. So do you want to just give us a quick walkthrough of that?
So the G20 is essentially like an international forum. And really how the G20 came about was as a result of financial crises that were primarily happening in the early 90s. And this was in Asia, Mexico, if I'm not mistaken, as well, in Russia as well. So in essence, it promulgated or encouraged finance ministers of all these member states to say, let's come together, right, to avoid basically, future financial crises, right? And that essentially birthed the G20. And hence the G20, whenever it comes to each and every presidency, it runs along two tracks, right? So there's the financial track, which would generally be run by sort of like the finance ministries of those, like the current presidency. So in South Africa, as we have the presidency, the finance track is mainly run by the Treasury, right?
Yeah.
In consultation, of course, with our finance minister. And then there's also the Sherpa track. So the Sherpa track is much more a political process, right? Okay. Which is essentially then in the context of South Africa, run by DECO. And DECO internationally is understood to be the foreign ministry. So essentially, the person who's leading the Sherpa track is the senior diplomat or senior official in DECO, and that would be Zain Denko as the Director General of the Department of International Relations and Cooperation or Foreign Ministry internationally. Yeah.
And I think for the audience which might not be aware, DECO is the Department of International Relations.
And cooperation. Yeah. But again, internationally, internationally, DECO is understood to be the office of the foreign minister. Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah.
So, what is Y20 then? Where does Y20? So, this is a big global process.
Yeah.
Am I correct in understanding the first actual G20 summit, like kind of the big thing we're facing, was actually mid-2000s that it took place?
Mm-hmm.
And funny enough, South Africa is actually the last one in this process. So there are 20 taking place with the 20 nations.
Yeah.
And South Africa happens to be the end of the first batch of G20s.
Yeah.
But with that just context, so Y20 is not formally part of that big government G20 process. It's something on the side that connects into it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to just quickly explain what is Y20 and how does it connect?
Yeah. So Y20 is Youth 20, and it is an engagement group under the G20 process, right? What are engagement groups? So essentially, engagement groups are basically, they run independent of government, right?
Okay.
So these are interest groups who organize themselves according to the different sectors that we have, right? So Y20 speaks to youth-related issues, right, within the G20. And then other engagement groups that we have is B20, which is Business 20, and they represent the sector of business or organized business. And then you have others like Labour 20. And of course, they would, speak to the issues of workers, trade unions. And then you would have also like C20, civil society, representing the interests of civil society. Think 20 or T20, which would represent the interests of like think tanks and research institutions and so on. But essentially with us as Y20, we are mainly focused on youth-related issues within the broader G20 member states.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's I want to sort of just highlight for our listeners, and we'll link it below. We do have a graphical explainer with a bunch of infographics which describe what each of these engagement groups are. I think there's 12 at the moment.
14.
Okay. Yeah. So we have a list of those 14 engagement groups, and we have an explanation of what each of them are, which we will link below in the description. So you were saying it's completely independent, and I think to clarify what that means is you aren't funded by government to do this. It's self-appointed, right? It's kind of youth organizations from across the country sort of coalesced and agreed this was the pathway through which we will have our voices heard. But you don't take instruction from DIRCO or any of the government processes. Yeah. Albeit at the end of this process, you hand over a report, right? Yeah. This is what the recommendations or the priority issues we want to be addressed.
Yeah. So, I mean, essentially, you're right. We don't take any direction from government. So engagement groups are structured in such a way, or they're driven by the principle that civil society is the one who must lead themselves, right? So essentially, with Y20, I mean, that's what we did, right? So the process initially when it began was that DIRCO said, oh, you can like submit concept documents to say, how would you imagine like, you know, Y20? What would be like your overarching themes? Yes. Obviously, that speak to the broader G20, South African presidency, equality, sustainability, and the other one I think is equality.
Yes.
Right. And essentially, we then said after, you know, sorting ourselves out as young people within like, you know, the youth development space, but also young people working in civil society or, you know, doing youth related work. In fact, we perhaps to take a back step, we started by forming a South African writing group on the Youth 20, right?
Okay.
And essentially that process allowed us to go into communities, but also bring in people who are really in grassroots, whether movements or in the grassroots, right? In communities and who know what's going on to basically shape this concept document. And then we then submitted it to DIRCO. And then they're like, sure, you guys can go ahead. And essentially we then, I mean, our theme is, we said we're going to be youth that build bridges, right?
Yes.
We are going to champion equality, drive sustainability, and so on, right? So in essence, we made sure that as well, that our broader theme, youth building bridges, aligns as well with, you know, the broader G20 South African presidency on equality, sustainability, and also equality as well. So really, I mean, I think maybe one way in which we really align with the broader G20 South African presidency is that, you know, we've been big on, we want to meet. So how do you meet the needs of the present without also compromising, you know, the needs of future generations, right? So yeah, that was us in terms of like our broader thematic area. And then through that broader theme, we have got like 5 thematic tracks, right? So one on climate change and, you know, environmental sustainability, right? So what are those green horizons? And what do we mean when we say we want to lead a just energy transition, right?
Yes, yes.
Because also we recognize, I think, that, you know, our young people come from communities that are hungry from electricity, they're facing energy issues and all those things. Our second thematic area is on inclusive economic growth and, you know, pathways to prosperity. I mean, you would know that, I mean, I think about what, plus minus 2 to 3 weeks ago, the States SA released the Quarter Labor Survey. And again, young people are at the intersections of, you know, inequality, unemployment, and, you know, all the other inequalities that exist, right?
Yeah.
And then the third one is on, you know, inclusive social development. So there we're really trying to say we want to leave no one behind.
Yes.
Right? And we're very committed to that because also we recognize the ways in which in the past, right? So the Y20, by the way, is the oldest engagement group, 14 years in existence.
Right. So it was it the first sort of engagement group that was actually created?
Yeah, and it was actually, it started in Canada in 2010, right?
Okay.
So basically, each and every G20 presidency is allowed to pivot, right?
Yeah.
So, and what I mean by that is that you can say, let's create another engagement group. Or actually, one. So in Brazil, for example, they created an engagement group that was focusing on the township economy.
Yes.
Right. And basically, it was called T20. But in South Africa, we didn't adopt a Township 20, right? But we then renamed it to be part of SU20, which is Startup 20. So now issues around, you know, the township economy, entrepreneurship, they're now addressed or tackled under SU20. Right. Yeah.
And then, but there still is a T20. That's Think Tank 20.
Yes.
That's
yes. So T20 in South Africa is Think 20, which represents the interests of think tanks and also research institutions.
And there was there in Brazil. There was one with the think tank as well.
Yeah.
So there was.
So there were two T20s, but the other
lovely,
one. Was,
lovely, lovely.
Yeah. The other one was focused on the townships, right?
Okay.
Specifically the township economy. And, you know, how do you formalize that in the sense that, you know, creating policies that enable an entrepreneur who's selling something in the township, whatever it is, you know, how
yes.
do you. So if they're going to a bank, right, how do they get because oftentimes I think there's been the recognition that banks don't, I guess if I have a business, like they don't, you know, weigh our applications the same, right?
Yes.
So they're trying to advocate for that within the South African presidency to say, how do you create regulation that actually speaks to young budding entrepreneurs? Yeah.
So what I'm hearing from you here, and I really like where it's going, it's that we're actually talking about financial reform of systems, yes, in a sense. And the focus is on, okay, we acknowledge that over 40% of young people in South Africa are unemployed. Yeah. There's a huge poverty and inequality crisis. Mm. But what are the systems, i.e., how do we change the way banks work? How do we change the way government works that will facilitate that? You said sort of the slogan is youth building bridges for this
Y20. Yeah.
There's a few things I really like about that and I'd like to explore more. Is that one, it's the youth are doing it.
Mm.
We're not saying, okay, well, you externally, you know, government, business, whoever, go and fix it.
Mm.
We are facilitating the space as young people and building those bridges so we can get from the side of poverty, lack of access to work, etc., over to the equality we're looking for.
Mm.
I know we only got through two of your focus or themes so far. I think, the climate change and just energy transition part of it, we have so much content on that. Actually, we just recorded a podcast with someone named Nick Headley all about it. So we can go into it today as well. But it's so central to, I think, a lot of civil society's work, and we'll hear it coming through. And I think it speaks to the importance of the issue that all the different engagement groups are actually talking about climate in some way, and the just energy transition. But what I'm particularly interested is the inclusive growth.
Yeah.
There was a really interesting video I managed to watch the other day, and we'll link below, is it talks about the inequality in America. That's replicatable around the world. It's not just limited to the USA. But how in the 80s, you sort of, prior to the 80s, what generally happened in society was as the productivity of society goes up, wealth is distributed among the different groups of people. So the lowest income, the middle income, and the highest income people all sort of more or less got wealthier at the same pace. And we can see that diverging in the 80s globally. What makes it worse in South Africa, though, is apartheid was actively doing that for the entire of the 20th century, effectively. So we've never not had that. And we kind of need to come to terms with, even if we get economic growth in South Africa right now, it doesn't really benefit working class people in this country. So I'm very interested in, if you'd like to dive a bit more into what are the sort of with that thematic area in particular, the inclusive growth, what are you guys focusing on, and what are your sort of hopes for how you can transform things a little bit?
Well, I mean, I think for us, you know, like I said earlier on, David, G20 is an international forum, and at the core of that international forum is about influencing policy change, right? And through that thematic area on, you know, inclusive social, you know, growth and so on, and leaving no one behind, is how do we promote policies that, for example, promote, you know, employment, for example, through innovation and all those things. You know, so for me, in South Africa, it's not lost on me that the presidency, through the president's private office and the initiatives that they do, they have very innovative social instruments, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I think post-COVID, you saw, for example, programs like, Youth Employment Service. You saw the ways in which, particularly South Africa, our South African government, through the presidency's office, tried to implement like EPWPs, right? Expanded Public Works Program.
Okay.
And also the Community Work Programs, right?
Yes.
And the purpose of those programs was to say, we have a high unemployment rate, right? How do you then use the community work programs, expanded public works programs, where, you know, they basically speak to, you know, infrastructure, like South African infrastructure and so on.
Yeah.
And yes, part of those programs also meant that, you know, people who were employed in those things, like, you know, you clean up your environment, like, so cleaning up our communities, but also assisting, you know, government with, like, you know, construction work, taking care of those areas and so on.
Yeah.
But what we then found ourselves getting into was that because the government said, let's empower them, the communities, right, as part of that inclusive economic growth, they then gave sort of like, so if they're coming to Alexander, Blackowry, Melville, or whatever community in, they then gave them to the local NGOs. So sort of like a tender system, right?
Where, oh, I see.
So the local NGOs in each and every community would be identified,
yeah,
saying we are giving you this thing to run it for, you know, 2 to 3 years and so on.
So like a grant.
Exactly, like a grant. And then essentially the NGOs would then, you know, inform the community through the community channels, whether it's the local councillor, the, you know, the ward committees, the forums that we have or that exist within each and every community,
yeah,
to say there's this opportunity for unemployed youth. And by the way, the CPWP, or the Community Work Project and the Expanded Public Works Program were mainly for young people, right? Okay. So in South Africa, youth is what?
Under 30.
15 to 35, if I'm not mistaken, right? But then what we found is that it then led to corruption, where the NGOs started appointing, you know, networks, like their own networks.
So right,
whether
right.
it's family, friends, and so on.
Right.
But, and I remember in post-COVID, I was involved in Wits University. I was doing actually research on is the CWP or the EPWP still a viable option to decrease youth unemployment, right?
Yes.
And I went to Vosloorus, which is a township in the East Rand, Alexander, Kagiso, a township in the West Rand. And young people say, you know, said, yeah, we can get involved with the CWP, right? And for me, then the question, so, but the way issues around, you know, being stereotyped because, you know, they wear a particular overall uniform that is orange. So for me, it's like, how do you make, you know, those social instruments aspirational, right? Because then the current format of the CWP is that the people who are working for the CWPs and EPWPs, yes, they're unemployed, but now it's primarily older people, right? And I'm not saying older people should not be employed beyond the youth age category that we have, 15 to 34, 35, right? But essentially, it is now full of older people. And when we did our research, we also found that they're also getting additional income, right? What that meant is that in my house, you know, you're also renting out rooms, or you're renting out your house space, maybe whether through shacks and so on, but you're also, you know, receiving a child grant because, you know, you're living with your grandchildren,
yes,
and all those things, right? So for me, part of our thematic area on inclusive economic growth or social, it's about how do you promote but sustainable policies? Because I think in this country, we are not short of policies and we are often told we lack implementation, right? And for me, you know, again, earlier in this year, yes, the YES program, and also we also have through the presidential office, the employment job, I think it's an employment job fund or something along those
many,
lines.
Many, many programs.
Yeah. They put a call out, and of course they are working with partners like Harambe and, you know, social partners who have a, you know, youth network and all those things. And essentially what they did is that, we have about 100,000 jobs.
Yes.
They were about 1.2, they received about 1.2 something million, right? Or plus minus a million applications from young people, right? And even, you know, another social instrument was the teacher assistance, right?
If we can stop for a second there, because I think what, you know, there's incalculable numbers. There's so many of these programs available.
Mm.
And if I'm understanding what you're saying, is it's not about trying to build new programs. It's not about saying,
yeah,
this program doesn't work. It's about how do we make this program work?
Yeah.
So we've already agreed that we want this sort of, let's say, progressive policy that's going to fix this. But it's how do we build it from there?
Mm.
How do we make it effective? How do we undermine the corruption?
Yeah.
Am I right in understanding that is like,
well, yeah,
that is how you guys are focusing on equal growth? How are you doing it? Like, is it, are you recommending processes about how these grants or programs need to change to prevent corruption?
Yeah.
Is it, are you saying we should actually invest more in this program, less in that one? What are the sort of proposals that Y20 is kind of moving towards?
Yeah. So I think what would be useful to mention is that we have a negotiations process that is going on, right? And essentially, earlier in the year, we identified what is called South African delegates. And these are five delegates representing each of the thematic tracks, right, who are negotiating, you know, per thematic tracks core issues, but representing a South African position on that, right?
Yeah.
Who are they negotiating with, those five delegates? They're negotiating with the delegates from the G20 member country states, specifically for Y20. So each and every country under G20, through the embassies and the relevant, you know, offices in each country, when we reached out to say this is the official, Y20, they then sent us a list of, this is the Argentinian delegation for Y20. This is the Brazilian delegation for Y20. And essentially in those negotiations that take about 2 hours to 3 hours long, each and every country is provided an opportunity to make input per thematic track. And they're negotiating, and part of negotiating is to say, I don't know, I don't agree with that language, or we disagree, or Saudi Arabia disagrees on this particular issue because it doesn't speak to our interests and all those things. But essentially, those negotiations are structured in such a way in order to be able to find each other, so that when we then submit our final report, as you said it, or what is officially is called the final communique, right, it will then represent all the young people of the G20 member states. So that is an international process, but I just want to quickly also touch on, there's also the South African-led process negotiations through the working groups. What do I mean? So in Y20, each of those five thematic tracks, the South African process is that, yes, whilst there's the international negotiations that are happening with the international counterparts, the South African process also includes, and the ways in which we've pivoted to say, each and every thematic track will have a working group. And that working group is also, those working groups are also a ways in which we are, arguing for inclusivity. Because in the past, Y20 was an exclusive space, unfortunately, where it will only be young people who are in those circles of multilateralism and so on, who would sort of like go and negotiate on South Africa's behalf. But we are saying the working groups, right, are going to be, so the working groups will be a way in which all South African youth will be able to also negotiate South Africa's position and assist our delegates, but also for the delegates to pressure test what is coming out of the international negotiations with the international counterparts.
So to take a step back, sort of summarize what you're saying, it's there are these parallel processes. What we're talking about is internationally, we're going to look to adopt policy that, let's say, looks at Canada, looks at South Africa, looks at European countries, Saudi Arabia, and says, these are policies that are working. Mm. We should create social mechanisms or global mechanisms to make those policies feasible.
Yes.
I imagine that's also about, there's often a commitment from global North countries to send more grants or better sort of financial instruments towards global South countries. Mm-hmm. So I imagine that's also part of the discussion.
Yeah.
So it's that discussion, which is a very collaborative among youth from across the G20 nations. Whereas there's also the very, very local issue of, this is what we need to accomplish locally. Mm-hmm. These are the instruments we currently have. And without spending more money, we can do this and this and this that will improve the outcomes. I think, I don't know if you want to touch on those last three thematic areas, just bearing in mind that I don't know if we have much more time. Mm-hmm. But before we sort of dive into each one, what are the three other thematic areas?
So I think I had mentioned three. So it's climate change and environmental sustainability. It's inclusive economic growth.
Yes.
There's also AI, digital innovation, and the future of work. So how do we build those key competency skills around AI, but also ethical considerations around AI?
Sure.
There's meaningful youth engagement and reforming multilateralism or multilateral organizations or forums for a just future.
Sorry, and just for our audience again, multilateralism, are we talking like international relations as in multilateralism?
Yes.
Or
So it's so like your UN agencies, AUs, and so on. And part of the reason why we are saying we need to reform them is because, these spaces are there.
Yes.
And, there are people who are there who represent, of course, our country and all the different countries who are part of, for example, let's say the UN or the AU. There are people who are making decisions on our behalf. Of course, not representing themselves as individuals, but their countries. And we are saying young people, they are there, but it's not enough of us, of young people.
Yeah.
And one of the things I like to make an example of is that how many of our young people actually know that the Pan-African Parliament is literally headquartered in South Africa,
Midrand,
Johannesburg. But in addition to that, to be more specific, that the Pan-African Parliament has a youth caucus. What are they caucusing about, right? And for me, it's about why aren't the young people at Pan-African Parliament, if there's a youth caucus, how do we then lobby that youth caucus to say, we hear you, but actually, this is what you should be saying from us as young people from South Africa, from Algeria, Egypt, and so on and so on.
I guess this gets back to what you were saying about youth building bridges, that some of these points of power already exist.
Yeah.
And how do we actually connect the people power, the mass of South Africans and young people around the world, actually, to these various points of power. Okay, so this caucus exists. How do we interact with that caucus? What can this caucus actually do to change the world? With that, there was one more. So you said, climate change, inclusive growth, AI, multilateralism, and
inclusive social development and fighting inequality.
Okay, so we kind of covered in our previous conversation.
To the economy, economic growth, right, and pathways to prosperity. The other one speaks to social development, right?
Yes.
And part of that one, someone might ask, but where's gender? That is where we are trying to be more diverse in terms of that specific.
So the intersectionality
to include, issues around, let's say, gender, LGBTQI rights, and so on, human rights, and so that is where we are, and issues that are facing people who are differently able-bodied and so on.
Yes,
and hence part of the last thematic one on inclusive social development, you're saying leaving no one behind.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So I think we've got quite a clear idea of what's going on here, of what Y20 is, how it fits into the G20, all these big ideas. But I think what it really comes down to is it's about how are youth priorities being prioritized? How are they being identified? How are young people working? And I was sort of hoping for this second half of the podcast for you to talk a bit about that and to let our audience know that you've been working in youth issues your entire adult life, actually. So this isn't something new to you. It's not just that Y20 showed up and now we're working in this space. And I think that goes for a lot of people working in Y20. It's kind of lifelong participation in trying to advocate for youth issues to be focused on, for youth voices to be heard, and for that energy and creativity which comes from young people to be so present. So I suppose, what would you say to young people that are looking at Y20 and have no idea how they should interact? Mm. They kind of see it as this large, multilateral, giant process. What's the answer? So can I get involved? I'm 33, so I'm technically a youth, I suppose. How do I get involved with Y20? How does anyone listening to this get involved with Y20?
So thank you for the question. So in terms of how you get involved, I'm a young person. I'm in rural Eastern Cape. How do I get involved with the Y20? Number one, because our mission has always to say we are committed to leaving no one behind and making this Y20 an inclusive one yet.
Yeah.
We, at the beginning of 2025, released an expression of interest form to say this is our concept document. These are our five thematic tracks that we're going to do the work of the Y20 around.
Mm-hmm.
Which one do you want to get involved in the form of a working group, right? So then we went through all the applications, and from that, we then started with this identifying South African delegates, right? So basically, these were five strong applications who are going to represent our country. And I say strong applications because for each and every thematic track, young people also applied to be delegates, right? To say, I want to be a delegate under climate change to represent the South African position on climate change, right? Now, they are at like I said earlier on, they're at an international level, right? And then there's also what we then call the technical task force for the working groups. These are the technical sounding board for the South African delegate, like informing their research, refining their writing skills, but also to say, no, but this is actually policy. This is what policy says, and looking at what the other countries are doing, right?
Mm.
And then there's the broader working groups where all those, we received about, plus minus 2,000 applications. And these were applications across the South African nine provinces, but also you would note that the AU was admitted as a member of the G20, I think in September of 2023, right?
Sure.
So we also had applications within the African Union space or member states.
So it's young people in South Africa and across the world, but with a big focus on Africa in particular.
It's mainly young people in the African continent. Let me say that.
Okay.
Yeah. And they also, come from various, youth in constituencies and doing various youth work, right?
Yes.
So that is the first level of involvement, right? That South African Y20 led process of working groups, right? So each and every working group will be having plus minus 300 people contributing to it. And when people applied, you could either apply as an individual or apply as an organization.
Yes.
That perhaps has a larger youth constituency.
Yes.
And then coming from the negotiations in the South African working groups informed by those, like that ecosystem that you have, constituency that you have, right? So that's the first form of involvement.
But, which is quite high level, right? We're saying, this is, do you have ideas?
Mm.
Can you contribute to a document which will ultimately be literally read by world leaders?
Yes.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, I think what I mentioned here as well is that we also have a research team within the Y20, right? The research and monitoring team. And what they've done is that they've also went through like a comparative notes, right? Or issue notes where, for example, we're able to see in the past Y20s, what were some of the key things that emerged? What was adopted? What was not adopted, right?
Yeah.
To also inform those negotiations, right? And I'll come later on what are, you know, about three high-level deliverables that we want to be seen to be reflected in the final communique, but also to be adopted in the G20 Leaders Summit in November.
Yes.
But before that, let me then finish on involvement. So one form of involvement is that, right, of the working groups themselves, but for people who applied, right? If you didn't apply, don't worry. It's fine. You can still participate. How can you get? How can you participate? We have what we call G20 Y20 roadshows, and these are provincial outreach programs. What that means is that we've partnered up with some of the G20 working groups, like on education and so on, and other partners like the South African Institute of International Affairs, because they also have a larger youth constituency. So we've been currently at the University of Northwest, the Mafikeng campus and the Botch campus, right? And they brought young people from Northwest, even if they were not university students, from Northwest University, to basically engage on the G20, the Y20, and make their inputs, right? We've been to the University of Venda, Limpopo. We've been to the University of, this past Monday, June, I was in Kimberley. So
not purely northern universities. No. So we're beginning to go south of it. Yeah.
So basically these are provincial. So we said, let's start with, you know, far-flung universities. And again, these, we're not just engaging university students. I just want to be clear. We're just using the university spaces as venues, but where we also have the university students engaging, but also people who are non-university students
and
who are youth to come and participate.
And what do these roadshows look like? Is it a place where any person can basically, well, specifically young people, can show up and just have a conversation with the people running Y20?
So we've partnered up with local partners per province
to
then spread the message to be like the G20 roadshow or provincial outreach, G20 Y20. Will be coming to Mpumalanga. Oh yeah, that's another place that we went to, province we went to.
Sure.
Right, so those social partners who also have a broader outreach in terms of, you know, communication, mobilizing, will then come and bring those young people from their constituencies or young people, people following the youth category, in addition to the university students themselves, to basically then come to the venue and make their inputs. So we then start by informing people, what is the G20? What is it about and why you should care, right? And why you should know about it. Right, and then what is the Y20? So just giving them that contextual and, you know, understanding and foregrounding. And then the second session, before we wrap up, we then do like workshop style inputs where, so per thematic, Y20 thematic track, right? We basically then sort of like put them into some sort of like negotiation simulation. You say, so the Y20 has 5 thematic tracks. This is what's been coming out of the negotiations. What do you think should be added? What are your key issues? 3 to 5 key issues that you think should be addressed under, you know, each thematic track's focus issues. And what do you think should be done, right? What should be, and we are collating all of that as part of making sure that we, you know, all the young people who've brought in their contributions, they can also inform the Y20 final communication, right? That we want to submit to the G20 Leader Summit for adoption. An endorsement, essentially, because we don't take it for granted that, you know, when our communique is fully adopted, right, we will start seeing changes. And of course, they won't be immediate. Change is incremental, especially with these international forums and all those things, right? They will require the backing of other nations and other allies, right? And hence the negotiations to say, let's talk, let's deliberate, let's negotiate. Yeah.
So what I'm hearing as well is, so we now have this understanding. There's this high-level process which organizations and individuals kind of, they will need some sort of policy or academic experience can participate in. Then you're doing these roadshows where you're basically sharing the ideas that you're working on with communities, and communities can get feedback on it. And that's a South African process.
Yeah.
Albeit, I imagine other countries are doing it themselves to some degree. Well, self-organizing, maybe.
Yeah, I can't speak on other countries. And the reason why is because each and every G20 presidency, particularly even the engagement groups, they're allowed to pivot, right? So next year, the incumbency.
Right.
So next year, G20 is going to the US. They might actually say, we're not going to do that. Or they might say, or maybe it goes to Spain. And Spain, they're like, oh, yeah, we like what South Africa did. We'll take it on.
Yes.
But we will make it our own thing. Or they, even the US might say, oh, we like what the Y20 South Africa did. But we, because remember, I mean, yeah, we're in these international negotiations. But again, we all come from different lived experiences, right? There are particular lived experiences that young people in America do not have. But there are similarities. Mm. And they might tweak our Y20 South Africa process and make it their own Y20 US process in 2026, right? But taking some one, two, three things from us. And that is why even when we hand over to the US, we form part of what is called the Troika, right? Which is like a three-person relationship.
Previous, current,
yeah,
and future.
Exactly. Yeah. So it will be Brazil, it will be South Africa, and the US. Oof. And essentially, we will then be speaking with the US colleagues next year to say, this is how we did our G20 in South Africa. And each and every engagement group will also hand over to the incoming engagement groups in the US to say, this is how we went about it. This is what worked. This is what didn't work. This is then what we need pivoting. This is our advice. And again, it's advice, right? They can take it or not. If yes, great. If not, then we continue to negotiate still to say, okay, let's think about it here. Let's clear.
So if I want to speak to that for a second, to sort of get to this idea is that this G20 is an ongoing process. It's advice. Mm. But we don't have to leave it there, right? And I think where the conversation gets exciting is we're going to hand over the set of advice. It's going to be very South African, have a lot of South African influence because of the roadshow, because it's taking place in South Africa, because we're leading on it this year. But I suppose what we want to do as well is we look at what Brazil accomplished. Mm. We're building upon it. We also need to accept that maybe things will go a bit backwards in the next presidency. I think there's a lot of concern around the American presidency and how it will function as hosts of G20.
Yeah.
But these issues are fightable issues. They're issues that we can advocate for, that we can push for, that we can work with counterparts in America that agree with us and counterparts around the world. Mm. And it's a way to move the conversation. Mm. When leaders of countries are talking and negotiating, they are now going to say, I remember that thing that came out of South Africa. And I remember these youth activists from South Africa are keeping in touch with me. They're keeping reminding me. They're sending me the petitions they're doing. And the idea is this is part of many ways in which we push global multilateral policy in different directions. Mm. Which I think leads to the conversation I want to really get to now, which is let's move away from G20.
Right? Yeah.
G20 is going to come. It's going to go. Mm. What do young people need to do to change the world? Like really fundamentally, what are the processes? What are the things that people need to do? Let's step away. G20 is going to give these and Y20 is going to give these recommendations. They're going to give us points upon which we know we can push. But how do we push them? When it's 2026, what do young people in South Africa do then, both locally to affect change and internationally?
I think three things. In terms of how do we as young people push for the things that we want, I say we need to organize ourselves. I think we need to mobilize ourselves. But also I think we need to conscientize ourselves. And essentially what I mean by that is when I look at what the young people in Kenya did, the way in which, you know, they mobilized themselves to say the government says they are going to increase tax. We are not employed as young people.
Yeah.
It's unaffordable. That is crazy, government. You are out of touch with the realities on the ground or in communities.
As we get into this, I just want to, we'll put in the description below what we're referring to here, which is protests which took place in Kenya last year, which were very effective in changing government policy. Mm. But please carry on, Moketsi.
But I mean, essentially, when you look at the strategies and the tactics they use, the use of internet, even despite there being an internet blackout and all those things, and the communication tools that they used, right? I think, you know, and I'm going to speak to South African youth right now to say, we are not organized, unfortunately, right? And essentially what I mean by that is that, yes, there are many, 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 you know, youth NGOs or civil society organizations that are doing phenomenal work with young people. But again, oftentimes we're also working in our silos, there in my little box, doing my own thing. That's not for me. That mindset needs to change. And I think it's also a mindset thing, right? But also, South Africa, we are a diverse nation. Essentially, what that means is, how do we also organize and mobilize and conscientize ourselves with in all our diversity, right? Because I think part of what we're also seeing, particularly in South Africa, is that we're all organizing in our own corners. Yeah, so the work has begun, but you're doing it in your own corner there with your own people, the people that you know that you're comfortable with, and you're not willing to listen to the other side. People who have, you know, divergences or divergent views with you, right?
You know what it makes me think of? Not that I'm the biggest fan or follower of football, but with football, you know, as a kid, you join sort of your school environment for playing football, your community or your street of friends, and then you join a bigger club that covers a whole bunch of communities. And then from that club, you go to one of the competitive, like, league clubs, you know, one of the massive ones that cover like a whole city or something. Yeah. And ultimately, you keep following these chains where, yeah, you're in your small group, but you're never siloed. At the end of the day, that small club that kids start in on their street or in their school at some way connects to Bafana Bafana, right? And when you describe that organizing, that's how we need to organize. It's, fine, we can be in our groupings and our various organizations, our clubs, or whatever they are. But at certain points, we need to connect with other ones and see beyond our self-siloing. Mm-hmm. So what you're basically saying is, or what I'm hearing you say, is right now we've broken into our groups, we've siloed, but we're not cross-connecting, and it's limiting our ability to form a stronger team.
Like, we are scattered, right? So you'll find young people who are in business, for example, like, who are in that sector, and who are saying, these ones from civil society, we all can be in the streets and all those things, right? So for me, I mean, I always say, we need to appreciate, like, there are different types of activism, like, or activisms, right? Right. Some of us will be in the boardroom. Some people will be in the street. Some people will be doing the social media. And so it's about saying, this work, it connects. The dots connect.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be. The ones who are in the streets don't have to shame the ones who are not. The ones who are not in the streets don't have to shame the ones who are in the streets, right? Because each contributes something to the greater goal.
I really like what you're saying there, because that's also the moving from organizing to mobilizing, right? It's like, is this person's time? So you grew up with privilege. You were able to go to university. You were able to get a good education, a good school. And let's say your family knew someone in a big business, and they were able to get you your interview to get you this great job. That job means you earn 50, 60, 70,000 a month. You don't necessarily have to be the one on the street with a picket. You don't have the time. You're now 35. You're busy. But what if you're putting aside a bit of money every month to help those which don't have money, but have the time to pick it?
Exactly.
That have the time to put pressure. And I suppose this is what the mobilization looks like.
Yeah.
It's, we're different constituencies, but we're all pushing for the same goal.
Exactly.
We're not trying to pull the ladder up and say, well, because now we're, you know, reached this upper class status, other people can go.
And I think for me, it must also be intergenerational. And what I mean by that is, I mean, just from those tactics you just mentioned, and one of them is, like, you know, putting money away to support this movement or whatever it is. Look at, in this country, South Africa, in the heydays of apartheid, the innovation that just came from people who were oppressed, right?
Yeah.
Or who felt suppressed and said, this is not right, right? People starting their own community work projects, your own local clinics and so on. So I think for me, and how I say it must be intergenerational is, how can we also have a conversation with the past or the former generation to say, how did you do it?
Yeah.
How can you assist this? Because I think also in this country, oftentimes what derails us, particularly as young people, and I think it's dangerous, is that we're like, nah, you're old. David is old now. Can't contribute. Like, you no longer have value. You know, it's like you reach 45 or you reach 50, 67.
Yeah.
And yes, we know that youth unemployment is a serious thing. Youth face the most harshest challenges and so on. But I also do think, even in our struggles, we need to have not only an intersectional framework you know, but also an intergenerational one, because I don't think it's useful to isolate the past or the former generation. And the reason why I say that is, I'm reminded the past is not done, David, in my view. It's like the past is, it's always in process, which is really to say it yields new information about itself every time we are willing to, well, unpack it, you know, reveal its distortions. If we engage with it, it will always yield new information, right? So, and that is why I think for me, even those who, you know, are past activists or whatever, or were in, you know, our former generation, our parents and so on, they also need to be engaged to say, you did it. Give us your tips and tricks.
You know, what that thing you said about parents, it's so iconic because what do our parents do when we're young? They invest in us.
Yeah.
They say, cool, I'm going to give, you have all the free time in the world. You don't need to earn money yet. Mm-hmm. So go to school. I'll make sure you're fed. I'll make sure you get conscientized. I'll make sure you get educated.
Yeah.
Why do we stop when we get into our 20s? Why do we stop?
Yeah.
And why don't we view, what we like to talk about in South Africa, how we have quite a friendly society where we kind of consider each other, we call each other brothers and sisters, right? Well, maybe we should treat each other like brothers and sisters sometimes. Yeah. And in the same sense, you were talking a lot about apartheid, and I'm thinking UDF and how they did things and wanting to connect, but also there's a reason we have a road called Brom Fisher after a person, a white activist who was a lawyer, right?
Yeah.
He represented the Rivonia trialists, if I remember correctly. That was not the side his privilege would encourage him to be on, right? His privilege would encourage him to have supported the white supremacists.
Mm.
But he didn't. He chose to take a different side. And I think we live in an era in which a lot of people that are maybe privileged, be irrespective of race, irrespective of country, gender, whatever privilege they may have, they don't accept the injustice of the world. They don't accept the inequality.
Mm.
But they sometimes don't know how to support the systems, how to support changing the world. So what you're describing is like, we need to be, when we talk about conscientizing, it's how do we integrate?
Exactly.
How do we say, look, we want to hold, frankly, we want to hold a party, right? We want to bring 20 kids who don't have access to much to a party. In that process, they'll get conscientized. Yeah, you going to your job in Sandton is going to pay for it.
Mm.
But at that party, they learn about politics. Mm. They learn about systems. They learn about, oh, actually, I can talk to my ward counselor, or I can talk to this businessman in my community, or whatever the story might be. And then they can be resourced to go do that work. Mm. Now, it doesn't seem obvious from the outside how paying for young people to have a party, so to speak, would be helpful.
Yeah.
But actually, it works. That's how we organize. That's how we mobilize. That's how we conscientize.
Yeah. And also, I think part of that intergenerational conversation and dialogue with the former generation is we must also be allowed to make our own mistakes as young people.
Yeah.
Even when it appears that we're repeating the same mistakes as our parents.
Yep.
And the past generation, I think we must be allowed, because that's where I think learning, unlearning, and relearning happens. And we're then able to shape better, you know, not only movements, but also social activism, but also just working towards making our country specifically have a much more equal and fairer face.
Something that is need to be kinder to our mistakes.
Mm.
Would you say what would you say? Like, we're quite harsh on mistakes. And we almost do this thing where we reject people. We say, well, you messed this up, or you tried this thing, didn't work. Well, we can never work with you again.
Yeah. We are very harsh. And one example, look at the Fees Must Fall struggle in South Africa, and the ways in which we were harsh to those young people who not only led, but also contributed, right? And I mean, I understand the critiques, and I welcome the critiques of the Fees Must Fall, right? The way things that could have been done better. But at that moment, you don't know that yourself, right?
Mm.
Because there are so many interesting things happening, or interest parties and all those things. For me, it's about, okay, fine, that mistake was done. We recognize it. We welcome it. How do we then use it to say, in other future struggles, or when we're advocating for other 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 issues, we've learned from that. Now we can do better.
You know, what's so fascinating what you said is, when you look at sports people, and you look at people who play, you know, your video gamers that play professionally, and you look at all these things, when something goes wrong, they have a term sometimes, which is school fees.
Yeah,
I went wrong, but school fees, I paid for it. Yeah. I had to learn. I had to make a mistake. Don't make it easy for me. I had to make a mistake.
Mm.
And what we recognize is, when someone made a mistake, but then they've worked out how to fix it, there's such a development. That's such a growth. I actually trust someone who's made a mistake, but learned from it more than a person who's never made that mistake. Yet we seem to have in some of the spaces we work, culture, if you made a mistake,
yeah,
you're done,
right? Cancel culture, as they call it.
Right?
And I don't think it's useful, particularly given the times that we're in. You know, and I say this because I'm reminded that, you know, in 2011, David, in Algeria, and you might know this, I think that in that country, in that particular time, there was also, you know, high unemployment rate and all those things. A young person set themselves on fire, right?
Arab Spring stuff.
And that really raptured or, you know, catapulted the Arab Spring, you know, in the, you know, northern Arab countries in Africa,
yes.
Right? And now we study it as the Arab Spring. And for me, when I analyze and I look at the news and what's happening currently, even in the southern tip of Africa, even the West, you know, look at what's happening in Nigeria around the End SARS movement, but also at the End Governance movement. Look at what we talked earlier on about Kenya. We know what's been happening in Mozambique last year during the elections, right? We know what's been happening as well in Eswatini, also in Zimbabwe. For me, I ask myself, are we at the tip of a southern spring? I'm not sure. I don't know, right? This is just my own analysis when I look at the news and current events that are happening with young people. And these are mostly led by young people who are saying, enough is enough, right? And for me, in addition to enough is enough, it's, okay, fine. How do we break down the system or smash it, as some people would say, you know, but also how do we rebuild? And I think for me, oftentimes, I'm not saying we should rebuild using old ways, but I'm just saying, how do you also rebuild but even the structures we want to dismantle, they still can provide us with, but them, surely there must have been something that's working there. How do we discover what's been working in that system while saying these ones that are not been working in that, whatever system it is, or, you know, whether it's government or civil society or business, we will rework these ones whilst then still using this one and building something new, right? So, yeah.
There's a lot of things to take away from our conversation, I think. And a lot of it is about, there are things we can do. There are processes. Mm. This is why 20. But also a lot of it sounds like it's about having grace for mistakes. Mm. It's about working together as young people, to conscientizing ourselves. And we can see it happening in countries around us. And I guess there's that old adage about young to know it properly, but something about, like, you know, intelligence is learning from your mistakes, wisdom is learning from other mistakes, that sort of thing. I can't remember if I got it right there, but what you're saying is there are things we can look at, and there are opportunities we can take advantage of, them right now with Y20 or beyond, be it in how we organize together, how we de-silo our groupings. Not, we don't destroy them. We don't say, no, you all have to join one megalith or monolithic sort of entity, but how do we make sure we collaborate? How do we make sure when a comrade of ours made a mistake, we help them understand their mistake, we learn from their mistake, we help them learn from their mistake, and no comrades make a mistake like that again? And yeah, I think to finish off, I suppose what I want to ask is, we've talked about now what are the opportunities, what are the processes, but it sounds like you're hopeful. And I think, to end off with, what are you hopeful about in terms of youth activism, youth voice, youth power in South Africa and the world?
I think for me, my hope is perhaps, you know, instilled by some of the communities I work in through, like, you know, the other work I do with regards to, that takes us to, like, communities where we have civic education workshops and all those things. You know, I think oftentimes we castigate our young people too much. Right. And I understand why, right, when we do the crunching numbers and all those things. But for me, I think what gives me hope is just the energy of this generation of young people, but also the energy of the past generation that I've engaged with, who are saying, but we're here, use us. Right.
Yeah.
We're here, use us. Like, let's talk. I think, that's what gives me hope. The phrase, we need a new language. And I think for me, I don't know what it is, but that new language, I think it's intergenerational. That two generations, or the past generation, the current, and even the future.
Yeah.
Right. We need a new language of how we're going to work together in making this country work. It's important to defy, but what are we demanding as well, right? As part of making sure that we all make this country work for each and every one of us. Because currently, where we are, I won't be then surprised if we then see another July unrest 2.0. And because also we are going for local government elections, you know, in 2026, and of course the national elections in 2029, there are people out there who do not mind organizing young people, mobilizing them, and conscientizing them to do the bad.
Yeah.
So whilst there are people who will do that, let's, in our numbers, say we are going to counter that and mobilize for good, right? And I know someone might be like, but there are people, there are people out there who are doing their own planning to say, young people are not employed. Young people are idle, not doing anything. And that is dangerous, right? Because there's someone out there who will plan to use them to, you know, do bad things in this country.
So let's use ourselves rather than letting others use us. Yeah. I think that's a poignant point to finish on. And thank you so much for joining us today, Moketsi.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for watching this Mobilize podcast. Remember to follow, subscribe, like, and comment.